being investigated as a hate crime?
It will be investigated as a hate crime.
We thought we had the show ready to go this week. When the terrible news started coming, there was a shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. It was a church, a historically black church. 9 people were shot. 9 people were dead. Unlike in a lot of tragedies like this, the gunman was captured alive, so maybe we'll get answers to some of the questions we're all asking ourselves right now. But there is no answer to the question asked in anguish by a community member at a gathering after the attack. If we're not safe in the church, God, you tell us where we are safe. Oh, I wish I had an answer for the surviving members of the Mother Emanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, one of the nation's oldest black churches and one with a deep history of enduring attacks of various kinds during some of the darkest days in our race's past. We'll talk more about this heartbreaking tragedy on next week's show. For now, I'm afraid I have to leave you with the image that haunts me since it was first reported. The 21-year-old white shooter sat for an hour with his future victims, welcomed and welcome at a prayer meeting. As unthinkable and as frequent as mass shootings are in our country, the fact that these were not random victims adds another layer to the already disturbing questions of racism, access to guns, and access to mental health services that inevitably will be part of the analysis of this event. My friends, we don't have answers to the most important questions. But right now, as we pray for the victims, including Pastor and State Senator Reverend Clementa Pinckney, I would end by saying, God help us. The truth is, it's time for us to do some things to help ourselves.
One of the reasons Pope Francis' promised encyclical on the environment has been so hotly anticipated is the prevalence of climate change denial on the part of some very prominent religious leaders. The question was, could this be a game changer in some faith communities? The encyclical was due to be released on Thursday, but the contents was leaked earlier in the week. For comment now on both the process and the potential, I'm happy to be joined by Jack Jenkins, Senior Religion Reporter at ThinkProgress.com. Jack, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You describe some of the contents as amazing. I'd like for you to expand on that.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, in some ways, the encyclical itself, in terms of the theology, it isn't new for the Catholic Church to embrace environmental concerns or, you know, environmentalism. But in the broader spectrum, you know, Pope Francis is pushing this out when a lot of countries are having really lively discussions, politicians and the like, about whether or not to pass policies to help, you know, fix and stem the tide of climate change. Mm-hmm. And Pope Francis, his document, I mean, he comes out, you know, and just cuts through a lot of the arguments against passing legislation against climate change or just climate change himself. The encyclical that we looked at, which, you know, it's a pre-release, the Vatican says it's not the full text, but what we looked at and had translated, you know, it says pretty clearly that, one, science and religion can work together. Two, that humanity has a collective responsibility to take care of the environment. And three, for religious people, this is really important, it directly addressed the question of whether or not humanity in the book of Genesis was given the right to exploit the planet or was charged with the responsibility of taking care of it, of being stewards of the earth. Mm-hmm. And the encyclical flatly rejects the idea that just because God created humanity in God's image, that we are required to just, you know, take all of the resources from the planet at will. It says that's a bad biblical interpretation. And then it goes on to talk a lot about very specific science. It says a lot about how caring for the poor. I mean, it's 200 pages of stuff that really does sink intellectual and scientific teeth into the idea of climate change, and then adds a moral backing to all of it.
You know, Jack, I think there are a lot of us who really don't understand how far-reaching the impact of this piece could be, especially political impact. Would you try to describe for us the really big impact this could have?
Well, I mean, you know, we can just take it just here specifically in the United States. You know, we have several different Catholic lawmakers, over 30 in the House of Representatives or in Congress at large, who are Catholic, who also deny that climate change is happening. You don't have to listen to everything the Pope says. You don't have to do everything that, you know, he decrees. But his voice is the loudest and the most authoritative within the Catholic Church. So now we have, you know, lawmakers here in the United States who are going to have to contend with the Pope having very specific things to say about climate change and how we should act on it. And this gets really complicated for a lot of them come September, when Pope Francis is scheduled to visit the United States. And when he comes, by the way, he was invited by Republicans, he's going to come deliver an address to Congress, where he's probably going to spend a good amount of time talking about climate change. And then he goes to the United Nations and also will probably talk about climate change and the environment there. So, you know, the Pope's impact is something of a bit of a debate among scholars, what that actually means, what that will actually look like. But at the end of the day, you have someone whose voice is arguably one of the loudest in the world and whose moral weight has been enough to, you know, help broker deals between the United States and Cuba and get, you know, leaders from both Israel and Palestine to sit in the same room together. That's all happening under Pope Francis with his suggestions. And so when he says something like this, it's going to go a long way towards, one, getting attention around climate change, and two, possibly getting a lot of lawmakers to change their perspectives on it.
Boy, that last one is a mouthful that some of these guys, especially some of them running for the office of the President of the United States, it's going to be very tough for them to brag about their religious convictions and then be in contradiction to their chief religious leader.
Yeah, well, actually, we had, you know, Jeb Bush, who announced his candidacy for president on Monday, saying that he thinks that Pope Francis should try to just stay out of political conversations. And what's interesting about that is last month he delivered a speech to Liberty University in which he argued that faith is should be very important to a politician. And he specifically spoke about the environment. And you've got not just him, but you've also got, you know, Rick Santorum, and several other candidates for president who are, identify as Catholic. And a lot of them are not really good on environmental issues. So, you know, they're going to have to contend with a pope who actively disagrees with them when they start talking about the importance of their faith and how it informs their policies.
Have there been some positive responses to the Pope's encyclical that would help us gauge the global impact?
One of the interesting things to remember is that a lot of the action on climate change at the international level happens at these large talks. We have, you know, the fact that he's speaking at the UN is a big deal. The fact that there's talks in Paris later this year, or just in several parts of the world later this year about climate change, he's going to come up a lot. But I think what's actually interesting, and this is something I noticed when I was looking through the document, something my friends in the religious space have noticed as well, is a lot of the footnotes for how he cites things in this encyclical are coming from the developing world. They're coming from scholars and from Catholic theologians and from scientists. They're embedded in places where climate change isn't just a theoretical concept. It isn't a chart on the board. It's their daily lives. And, you know, one of the things that this document argues is that the people who were the poorest in the world are the ones who are most directly impacted by climate change. And so some of the most people who are most supportive of taking action on climate change are the rest of the planet, the non-industrialized nations who don't have all the money to be able to spend all this time and energy trying to exploit the planet, because they're trying to deal with the effects of wealthy nations who do so on their own citizens. So, you know, I think what you're going to see is this broad coalition of nations who have already been speaking up for action and on climate change and environmentalism for quite some time, getting a really big, you know, fire lit on, underneath them, so that they can come speak with one voice as the rest of the planet that is being affected by the actions of a few wealthy nations.
Jack, is it possible that the most negativity about the Pope's encyclical may come from the United States?
It's definitely possible, especially from a few select politicians. Now, don't misunderstand, you're also going to have some dissent about this within the church. You're going to have a few bishops and a few priests who will be upset about the Pope's stance on this. But, you know, I do think you're going to see some of the firmest resistance from, you know, the United States, as well as other industrialized Western nations, because they have the most to lose from, you know, trying to dial back some of our exploitation of the planet. You know, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of business in doing stuff, you know, the energy resources, you know, energy, entire energy economies that are based around, you know, extracting resources from the planet. And because these wealthy nations kind of control those, by and large, they're the ones you might see go kicking and screaming into this conversation.
Yeah. Well, I know that in your work, you look not only at specific issues like this, but you also know a good bit about the political environment. What's your guess on how politicians like some of those we've already mentioned today, Jeb Bush, Santorum, what's going to be, because they can't just keep saying he ought to stay out of this because he's already in it. So how are they going to deal with his message?
You know, it really does put them in a tough spot because, you know, for years we've heard, you know, on issues such as homosexuality or abortion or contraception, some conservative-leaning lawmakers say, you know, you really just need to listen to the Pope, you need to listen to, you know, faith leaders on these issues. And now they've been kind of put in a box. You know, they're being pushed back on their heels on their own rhetoric when the Pope says, yeah, you know, maybe you should listen to me about the environment, about cleaning up the earth.
Yeah.
And that changes the game a little bit. I mean, it's really unclear. It looks like right now some of the politicians are simply dismissing him. You know, Jeb Bush saying that Pope Francis should stay out of politics, it echoes a phrase that Santorum gave a couple weeks ago when he said Pope Francis should leave science to scientists. Which is interesting because Pope Francis actually does have a degree in chemistry, but, you know, so he actually is a scientist in many respects.
Yeah.
But I think the difficulty is I don't think the Republican Party platform, I don't think a lot of conservatives, I don't think a lot of politicians really know how to respond to this. And it's one of the few instances in American politics where a monkey wrench gets thrown in and people don't have a really codified plan of action for how to respond.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see a lot of scrambling and dodging from Republican Party candidates here moving forward.
You mentioned some dissent within the Catholic Church itself, and I think we've actually got to the point we predict that that's going to happen. It's such a large body of faithful people, and they're going to be different opinions. How will the Vatican, as you understand it, handle the pushback that comes within the Catholic Church?
Well, it's a really good question because I think it matters a lot as to how hard of a line Pope Francis is willing to toe on this, right? So, you know, you're allowed to think different things within the Catholic Church. There are a few things that are, you know, infallible that the Pope can say. Oh, that's only happened twice in the Church's history where a pope came down and said, "This is something you cannot move on." And on basic tenets of faith, the Virgin Mary, you know, Jesus' resurrection, those sorts of things, the Catholic Church tries to make sure there's uniform agreement, generally speaking, among its bishops. But on stuff like this, it kind of comes down to political pressure, right? So the Pope it stands pretty firm on wanting to support the poor and stands against, you know, just taking in a ton of wealth. So when Pope Francis dismissed a bishop in Germany for, you know, he was called the bling bishop because he just spent all of this church money on his own house and his own wealth, you know, that says a lot about what the Pope is willing to take action on. You know, is he really going to kick? Is he willing to kick people out for not caring for the poor? Yes, actually, in extreme cases, he is. And in the meantime, he's going to be, you know, calling on the different apparatuses of the church. You know, this is like the Conference of Catholic Bishops. This is like the Vatican instruments themselves, the people who are in the Vatican, and saying, you know, we need to push this message all the way down to the actual churches. You know, who is preaching this on Sunday and on Saturday, you know, making sure that parishioners hear this. And you're already starting to see some effect. I mean, there was a story in the New York Times today about how that, you know, bishops down in Miami are already starting to prepare their sermons for the rest of the summer, and they're all on climate change. Wow. So I think, you know, you're going to have people who disagree, and I think they're just going to have to respectfully disagree within the church. But it seems to me like Pope Francis, his voice is always going to be louder than your average bishop or your average priest, and he's going to keep talking about this for a long, throughout the rest of his papacy. Previous couple popes, maybe, you know, maybe some of them, you can get back into the 20th century and find some really influential popes. Mm-hmm. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to find some who could, say, broker a deal between Cuba and the United States, right, or start to make inroads and dealing with the Israel-Palestine situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something you can only really, you know, wade into and have an impact on as the pope if you really enjoy global popularity and global moral weight. Mm-hmm. And there's something about this pope speaking up for the oppressed, speaking up for the people who are the poorest in the world, that has struck a chord in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. And yeah, I think that makes him really difficult to ignore. And, yeah, and that's why this encyclical is going to matter a lot more than your average encyclical.
Jack Jenkins is senior religion reporter at thinkprogress.org from the Center for American Progress. We'll link to his articles. So what exactly is the Pope's new encyclical on the environment anyway? Jack, I want to thank you very much for being with us. It's a pleasure to talk with you. Glad you were on State of Belief today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.